Okay, welcome to our second episode of our Curious Scenes Bible study. We focused on chapters 13, 14, and 15 of Judges. In our first episode, we introduced some background information, some history around the book of Judges, and the people of Israel at this time. From our first episode, we were asking the question, what is Samson? And some from our Out of Water group have added into the discussion their thoughts and ideas, what they've collected on Samson from chapters 13, 14, 15. And some of these things include, he's a son. He's a Danite from the Danite clan within Israel. He's a promised son, as we discussed some in our first episode. He's a Nazirite. He's a leader. He's stirred by the Spirit, led by the Lord, powered by the Spirit. He is secretive. This guy does not tell his parents anything. As some in our group discussed, he's kind of a wrecking ball. And then by the end of chapter 15, he also has the capability of being worn out and thirsty, needing help from God. So now we're going to be getting a little deeper into some of these ideas and really start digging into what is Samson.
So here we go.
First up, we're going to be discussing this idea of Samson being a promised son. Samson's not the only promised son to a woman who has not had any children. He's in pretty good company. Here are some other promised sons that appear throughout the Bible. First up, Isaac. Yahweh promises Abraham and Sarah that they will have a son. This is announced to Abraham with Sarah nearby. Next, Jacob. Isaac prays to Yahweh on behalf of his wife, Rebekah, and Yahweh answers his prayer. While pregnant, Yahweh tells Rebekah, his wife, that she has twins. That would be Esau and Jacob. In a similar fashion, God gives Jacob a son through Rachel, who also is unable to have children. But no announcement or communication from God was given. This is found in Genesis 30, verses 22 through 24. Then God remembered Rachel. He listened to her and enabled her to conceive. She became pregnant and gave birth to a son and said, God has taken away my disgrace. She named him Joseph and said, may the Lord add to me another son. Next up, Samson. The angel of the Lord tells Manoah's barren wife that she will have a son. And then the angel appears again to Manoah's wife, and she goes to get Manoah. The announcement is retold to both of them at that point. And then, after it's all over, that's when Manoah has his freakout session. Next up, Samuel. Elkanah loves his wife Hannah, who is also not able to have children. Hannah prays to Yahweh, look at my misery, remember me, please give me a son, and I will give him to you all the days of his life. And then Eli, the priest, confirms her prayer to Hannah. And our next promised son contestant is John. Luke chapter 1 says that Zechariah and his wife Elizabeth had no children because she was not able to conceive, and they were both very old. This is just like Abraham and Sarah, who are also on this list. The angel of the Lord appeared to Zechariah and tells him that your wife will bear you a son. Apparently, Zechariah has some doubts and receives some consequences. He actually can't speak until his son is born. You should check it out. Next promised son, Jesus. Also in Luke chapter 1, God sends his angel Gabriel to a virgin, Mary, who is pledged to be married to Joseph. Gabriel tells Mary that she will give birth to a son and that she will call him Jesus. This is then later confirmed by God to Joseph, as mentioned in episode 1. There were some doubts here on Joseph's behalf that kind of needed to be cleared up by God. So I don't know if you are paying attention, but the score of announcements of promised sons, whether they were announced to men or announced to women, yeah, the score is men 2, women 2. But I'll give half points to Sarah, Rebecca, and Hannah. So the final score will be men 2, women 3.5. The ladies have it. And hey, I may have missed one. Let me know if you can think of any other promised son stories that show up in the Bible. Next up, is Samson a judge or not? To be able to answer that question, we're going to have to look at the specific word used for judge, and also look at the details of some of the other judges throughout the book of Judges. Every time the word judge appears in the book of Judges, that Hebrew word is shapat. Unfortunately, the word shapat has a very wide range of meaning. It is also the most common use of the word for judge. It can mean to decide, to lead, to defend, to argue a matter, to be a ruler, to govern, or to administer. So we'll be looking more into the role that these judges play throughout the course of the book of Judges itself. As we discussed in our first episode, these judges are key figures and leaders in Israel that are appointed to rescue Israel out of the hands of their enemies. They are not judges in the same sense of the judicial judges in our culture that settled legal disputes. Moses is one who actually functions in both types of roles. Now, clearly, Moses is not a judge at this point in time of Israel's history, but he was appointed by God to deliver Israel out of the hands of the Egyptians, and he was also appointed by God to settle legal and moral disputes among the Israelites. So the judges appointed during the timeline of the book of Judges are primarily appointed leaders who bring about military victories. Most of them are or become warriors. So let's take a look at the judges listed throughout the book of Judges and see in which ways they are similar and in which ways they are different. First up is Othniel, who was Caleb's younger brother. He saved Israel after 8 years of subjugation, and the Spirit of the Lord came on him. Next, Ehud, who saved Israel after 18 years of subjugation under Moab, the Ammonites, and the Amalekites. And then there's Shamgar, who we're now deeming the major blip of Judges, who we know almost nothing about, because he's the major blip of Judges. Now Deborah is a little more interesting. She was leading Israel, but it looks like Barak was the one intended to be the judge. When she tells him that he needs to go to battle, he doesn't lead. It seems like this prophet, wife, and leader of Israel is the one who's supposed to be appointing the judge, who would be Barak. But because he's either a coward or doesn't trust God, she tells him that the victory is going to go to a woman. It's as if the judgeship that would have been Barak's is now split up between 3 people, or possibly just 2, Deborah, Jael, and then a Barak. He's just along for the ride. The next judge after this was Gideon, who saved Israel after 7 years of subjugation, and he was appointed by the angel of the Lord. And again, Gideon is another judge who's winning military victories to free Israel. He actually has a lot of back and forth with God. He has ideas on how to do things, and God keeps telling him, "Let me show you what faith looks like." Now Abimelech comes next. He's kind of an odd one. He anoints himself after killing all of his brothers, but God does use him to clean up Israel's political scene, and God repays his wickedness back on Abimelech's head. Literally. I personally classify Abimelech as a subcategory of judge. To each his own. Take a read, and you decide. After Abimelech comes Tola and Jair. Neither one of these has a specific worship of other gods mentioned during this time. Tola led Israel for 23 years, and Jair leads Israel for 22 years. Jephthah, on the other hand, there's Baal worship and a whole lot more going on in Israel at this time. Israel was given over to the Philistines and Ammonites for 18 years. Next after Jephthah is Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon. I'm now referring to these guys as the minor blips in Judges. There's almost nothing there. Take a look. No mention of gods that Israel's worshiping during this time. No mention of appointment of these judges. And no mention of people that they are subject to. So that brings us to Samson. Samson's unique. He will save Israel after 40 years of Philistine oppression, a much longer period than any of the other judges. He is appointed by the angel of the Lord, just like Gideon. The Spirit of the Lord comes on him in power, like Othniel, and he is also under a Nazirite vow. There is no other judge like Samson. What we do know is that Samson is appointed to lead Israel, and he also gives them military-style victories, all by himself, no army needed. So is Samson a judge? Yes, but he is also a unique judge. Next, we're going to be talking about Samson the Nazarite. All right, in case you need a break or need a good pausing point to do some reading or go to the potty.
This break is sponsored by the Taco Repairman. Are you having taco problems? Is soft shell or hard shell the right choice for you? Is there really a right way to fold a taco? If you're experiencing a taco catastrophe or a burrito blunder, the Taco Repairman is here to help. Always on call. Always courteous. Always discreet. Call the Taco Repairman for strategic planning or taco emergencies at 889-8967. And let's talk about life. Speaking of hashtag talk about life, did you hear about the new series that's being developed about the unreal life of your friendly area taco repairman? That's right. This series will feature stories from the perspective of the taco repairman himself and the lives of those he's helped. Hashtag talk about life. And don't forget to call your friendly area taco repairman at 889-8967. Now back to the Curious Scenes podcast.
So what is a Nazarite anyway? Where's the first time that Nazarite appears in the Bible? Numbers chapter 6, verses 1 through 21. Here are some regulations for a person, male or female, who wants to make a special vow to God as a Nazarite. Number 1, they must abstain from wine, fermented drink, or even vinegar made from these things. They must not eat anything that comes from the grapevine, period. And if you think that's an exaggeration, you should read it for yourself. It's pretty intense. Number 2, no razor may be used on their head. They must let their hair grow long. Number 3, they must not go near a dead body, not even their own family, because they will become ceremonially unclean. As a bonus, there's a step-by-step procedure involving offerings and priests and removal of their hair if they're surprised by someone dying suddenly in their presence, or when the period of their dedication is over. Normally, the term of the dedication is set by the person who's wanting to make the vow to God, not by God himself. Normally. The word Nazarite is very uncommon in the Bible. In fact, it hardly shows up at all. Samson is the only one cited specifically to be a Nazarite. However, there are a few examples of people that might fit the bill, or at least they do have some sort of special dedication similar to that of a Nazarite vow. Hey, do you remember that both Samson and Samuel were promised sons to barren women? Well, it looks like they may have even more in common. In 1 Samuel chapter 1, Hannah vows to Yahweh that her son would be dedicated to God all of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head. Although Samuel is not called out specifically as a Nazarite, it does seem like this is Hannah's intention when she made her prayer and vow with Yahweh. Okay, some other people mentioned in the Bible who are not Nazarites, but may share some similarities to the vows and some of the restrictions given to Nazarites. Check out Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah from the book of Daniel. Also, John the Baptist seems to have some unique signs of dedication to God as well, in Matthew chapter 3 and Mark chapter 1. But this may have connections to the seclusion practices of the Essenes. We don't really know. So the next question is, did Samson violate any of those Nazarite regulations? Well, take a look back at chapter 13. Samson's mom is the one being held to the Nazarite restrictions. That's chapter 13, verses 3 through 5. Manoah's wife may not drink wine or fermented drink and may not eat anything unclean, not Samson, at least not directly. But remember that this boy will be a Nazarite dedicated to God from the womb as decided by God himself. So, since he was a Nazarite from the womb, let's see how he stacks up. Does Samson eat or drink anything from the vine? No. Not that we know of. Does Samson cut his hair? No, again. Not until it's done to him later in chapter 16. Does Samson make himself unclean? Well, yes, it looks like he does. Let's see. There's one dead lion carcass. He makes 30 men dead of Ashkelon and then loots the bodies. He wrangles hundreds of foxes or hyenas, then slaughtered many of the Philistines. dead bodies again, and then picks up a donkey's jawbone.
I touch dead things.
And kills 1,000 men.
More dead bodies.
I bet right about now you're thinking, why does it matter if he wrangled hundreds of foxes? And what's the deal with hyenas? Well, I believe that both sets of animals are considered unclean scavengers. The foxes don't travel in groups, but the hyenas do. And it would be much easier to explain that Samson went out and got hundreds of hyenas than a few foxes, let alone hundreds of them. Either way, I'll leave that up to you if you want to look into that. All right, at this point, I'm going to show my hand a little bit. Something that I've been asking myself, is Samson a big, strong guy or not? In chapters 13, 14, and 15, we don't get any physical descriptions of Samson at all. But here are some things that we do find. In Judges 14, verses 12 through 14, Samson challenges the 30 men with a riddle or a test of the mind, not with a test of strength. And then in chapter 15, verses 4 and 5, Samson chooses a clever way, a test of his mind, to get back and seek revenge on the Philistines. He did not fight them. He conceived of a way to destroy their crops instead. And then, in chapter 15, verses 11 through 13, Samson does not fight the 3,000 men of Judah. Instead, he again uses a clever strategy. He agrees to be tied up and captured so that he will have the opportunity to encounter the Philistines yet again. I've got to admit, at this point, Samson seems less like He-Man and a lot more like a mustache-twirling character, or the Joker, or the Riddler. He definitely seems to be more like a psychological villain to the Philistines than a physical one. Now, don't get me wrong, he did some incredible things, but every time he did one of these incredible feats, one of these acts, he was always powered by the Spirit, or the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. Take a look at verse 14 in chapter 15. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. The ropes on him became like charred flax. They broke apart. And the bindings dropped from his hands. Why are we getting descriptions of the materials used to tie him up and not any descriptions of his physical person? Samson also becomes exhausted after battling the Philistines. He's not Superman. He's flesh and blood, overshadowed by the Spirit of the Lord. And I think we'll stop there for now. So remember, our Out of Water group, respond to this episode and post your questions or thoughts, and we're going to dig deeper into chapter 16 and see if any of these things change. Is Samson who we think he is compared to the previous three chapters? Let's take a look. Thank you guys, and God bless.